Chapter 9. How Not to Die from Blood Cancers. 11-year-old Missy had leukemia. It was in remission, thanks in part to yellow bags of chemo that hung from an IV pole she rolled around the hospital halls. Missy was one of my first patients in my pediatrics rotation during medical school at the Eastern Maine Medical Center in Bangor, home to Stephen King, moose crossing signs, and billboards advertising lobster ice cream. During this time, I was in full Patch Adams regalia, from the fuzzy pink rabbit ears on my head down to the plastic rainbow slinkies trailing at my feet. On every button of my white doctor's coat hung a Beanie Baby, and every buttonhole was stuffed a stuffed animal's foot. Missy drew a smiley face on my beanie hippo and named the rooster attached to my stethoscope Elvis. She loved to paint pictures for me and signed each one of them in all caps, "From Missy." In these pictures, she still had her curly brown locks. In reality, though, her head was completely bald. She refused to wear a wig, which only made her smile seem brighter. I painted her nails a pale pink, and she painted mine a lovely purplish brown. I remember the morning after she gave me the manicure. My senior resident took me aside after rounds. "Your fingernails are getting in people's way," he said. "Huh?" I asked. "The attending physicians are complaining," he replied. "This is a conservative profession." I tried to explain that I didn't paint them myself, upset I even felt the need to explain it all. The senior resident knew that Missy had done it, but he didn't seem to care. "Medicine," he said, "is also an anti-emotion profession." Later, the chair of the department had a talk with me. A number of the attending physicians were concerned I was too enthusiastic, too dramatic, too sensitive. My wife remarked they probably just had slinky envy. The next day, head down, I walked into Missy's room. "I'm sorry," I told her. "The doctors made me take off the nail polish." I held up my hands to show her. She inspected them and said with great indignation, "If you can't wear it, then I'm not going to either." So I helped her take off her polish, bemused and empowered by such solidarity from an 11-year-old. I let her paint my toenails instead. I remember the last note I wrote in Missy's medical chart. Hospital progress notes are written in SOAP format, a mnemonic for subjective findings, objective findings, assessment, and plan. I wrote, "Assessment, 11-year-old girl finishing last round of maintenance chemotherapy. Plan, Disney World." Childhood leukemia is one of the few success stories in our war on cancer, with 10-year survival rates as high as 90%. Yet it still affects more children than any other cancer and is 10 times more likely to be diagnosed in adults, among whom current treatments are much less effective. What can we do to prevent blood cancers in the first place? Blood cancers are sometimes referred to as liquid tumors, since the cancer cells often circulate throughout the body rather than get concentrated in a solid mass. These cancers typically begin undetected in the bone marrow, that spongy tissue in the interior of our bones where red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets are born. When healthy, your red blood cells deliver oxygen throughout your body, your white blood cells fight off infections, and your platelets help your blood to clot. Most blood cancers involve mutations of the white cells. Blood cancers can be categorized into three types: leukemia, lymphoma, and myeloma. Leukemia, from the Greek roots leukos, or white, and haema, or blood, is a disease in which the bone marrow feverishly produces abnormal white blood cells. Unlike normal ones, these imposters aren't able to fight infection. They also impair the ability of your bone marrow to produce normal red and white cells by crowding out healthy ones, creating a diminished healthy blood count that can lead to anemia, infection, and eventually death. According to the American Cancer Society, 52,000 Americans are diagnosed with leukemia and 24,000 die from it every year. Lymphoma is a blood cancer of lymphocytes, which are specialized types of white blood cells. Lymphoma cells multiply quickly and can collect in your lymph nodes, small immune organs that are spread throughout the body, including the armpits, neck, and groin. Lymph nodes help to filter your blood. Like leukemia, lymphoma can crowd out healthy cells and impair your ability to fight infections. You may have heard about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Hodgkin's lymphoma can strike young adults, but it's rare and usually treatable form of lymphoma. As its name suggests, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma includes all the other dozens of types of lymphoma. They're more common and can be harder to treat, and their risk increases with age. The American Cancer Society estimates that there are 70,000 new cases of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma every year and about 19,000 deaths. Finally, myeloma is a cancer of plasma cells, which are white blood cells that produce antibodies, the proteins that stick to invaders and infected cells to neutralize or tag them for destruction. Cancerous plasma cells can displace healthy cells from your bone marrow and make abnormal antibodies that can clog the kidneys. About 90% of myeloma sufferers are discovered with masses of cancer cells growing in multiple bones of their bodies, hence the common term for this condition, multiple myeloma. Each year, 24,000 people are diagnosed with multiple myeloma, and 11,000 die. Most people with multiple myeloma live for only a few years after diagnosis. Though treatable, multiple myeloma is considered incurable. That's why prevention is key. Fortunately, dietary changes may reduce our risk of all these blood cancers. Foods associated with decreased risk of blood cancers. After following more than 60,000 people for more than a dozen years, University of Oxford researchers found that those who consume a plant-based diet are less likely to develop all forms of cancer combined. The greatest protection appeared to be against blood cancers. The incidence of leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma among those eating vegetarian diets is nearly half that of those eating meat. Why is this greatly reduced risk of blood cancers associated with a more plant-based diet? The British Journal of Cancer concluded, quote, "more research is needed to understand the mechanisms behind this," unquote. While they're figuring out the reasons, why not get a head start and try adding more healthy plant foods to your plate today? Greens and cancer. The key to cancer prevention and treatment is to keep tumor cells from multiplying out of control while allowing healthy cells to grow normally. Chemotherapy and radiation can do a great job of wiping out cancer cells, but healthy cells can get caught in the crossfire. Some compounds in plants, though, may be more discriminating. For instance, sulforaphane, considered one of the more active components in cruciferous vegetables, kills human leukemia cells in a petri dish while having little impact on the growth of normal cells. As we've discussed, cruciferous vegetables include broccoli, cauliflower, and kale, but there are many others in this family. Collard greens, watercress, bok choy, kohlrabi, rutabagas, turnip, arugula, radishes, including horseradish, wasabi, all types of cabbage. It's intriguing that dripping cabbage compounds on cancer cells affects them in a laboratory, but what really matters is whether people with blood cancers who eat lots of vegetables actually live longer than those who don't. For about 8 years, Yale University researchers followed more than 500 women with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Those who started out eating three or more servings of vegetables daily had a 42% improved survival rate over those who ate less. Green leafy vegetables, including salads and cooked greens and citrus fruits, appeared most protective. It's not clear, though, whether the survival benefit arose from helping to keep the cancer at bay or from improving patients' tolerance to the chemotherapy and radiation treatments they were receiving. The accompanying editorial in the journal Leukemia and Lymphoma suggested that, quote, "lymphoma diagnosis may be an important teachable moment to improve diet," unquote. I would suggest you not wait until a cancer diagnosis to clean up your diet, though. The Iowa Women's Health Study, which has followed more than 35,000 women for decades, found that higher broccoli and other cruciferous vegetable intake was associated with lower risk of getting non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the first place. Likewise, a study at Mayo Clinic found that those who ate five or more servings of green leafy vegetables a week had roughly half the odds of getting lymphoma compared to those who ate less than one serving a week. Some of the plant-based protection might have been due to the antioxidant properties of fruits and vegetables. Higher dietary intake of antioxidants is associated with significantly lower lymphoma risk. Note I said dietary intake, not supplementary intake. Antioxidant supplements don't appear to work. For example, getting lots of vitamin C in your diet is associated with lower lymphoma risk, but taking in even more vitamin C in pill form did not seem to help. The same was found for carotenoid antioxidants like beta-carotene. Apparently, pills do not have the same cancer-fighting effects as produce. When it comes to certain other cancers, like those of the digestive tract, antioxidant supplements may even make things worse. Combinations of antioxidants like vitamin A, vitamin E, and beta-carotene in pill form were associated with increased risk of death in those who took them. Supplements contain only a select few antioxidants, whereas your body relies on hundreds of them, all working synergistically to create a network to help the body dispose of free radicals. High doses of a single antioxidant may upset this delicate balance and may actually diminish your body's ability to fight cancer. When you buy antioxidant supplements, you may be doling out money to live a shorter life. Save your cash and your health by eating the real thing, food. Acai berries and leukemia. Acai berries gained celebrity status in 2008 when television personality Dr. Mehmet Oz talked about them on The Oprah Winfrey Show. This spawned a frenzy of knockoff supplements, powders, shakes, and other dubious products bearing the acai berry label, but not necessarily containing any of the actual berry. Even major corporations jumped on the acai bandwagon, including Anheuser-Busch with its 180 Blue with acai energy drink, and Coca-Cola with its Bossa Nova beverage. This is an all-too-common practice in the quote-unquote superfruit supplement and beverage market, where less than a quarter of products sold may even contain the ingredients their labels claim. The benefits of these products are suspect at best, but there is some preliminary research on real acai berries, which can be purchased as unsweetened frozen pulp. The first study published in the medical literature on the effects of acai on human tissue was performed on leukemia cells. Researchers dripped an acai berry extract on leukemia cells taken from a 36-year-old woman. It appeared to trigger self-destruct reactions in up to 86% of the cells. Also, sprinkling some freeze-dried acai berries on immune cells called macrophages, from the Greek words makros and phagian, meaning big eater, in a petri dish appeared to enable the cells to engulf and devour up to 40% more microbes than usual. Though the leukemia study was done using acai extract at the concentration one might expect to find in the bloodstream after eating the berries, no studies have yet been performed on cancer patients themselves, just cancer cells in a test tube, so more testing is needed. Indeed, the only clinical studies on acai berries published so far were two small industry-funded trials that showed modest benefit for osteoarthritis sufferers and some metabolic parameters of overweight subjects. In terms of antioxidant bang for your buck, acai berries get honorable mention, beating out other superstars such as walnuts, apples, and cranberries. The bronze for best bargain, though, goes to cloves. The silver to cinnamon, and the gold for most antioxidants per dollar, according to a USDA database of common foods, goes to purple cabbage. Acai berries, however, would probably make a tastier smoothie. Curcumin and multiple myeloma. As noted, multiple myeloma is one of the most dreaded cancers. It's practically incurable, even with aggressive medical treatment. As myeloma cells take over the bone marrow, healthy white blood cells continue to decline in number, which increases your susceptibility to infection. Reduced numbers of red blood cells can lead to anemia, and reduced platelet counts can lead to serious bleeding. Once diagnosed, most people survive fewer than 5 years. Multiple myeloma does not occur out of the blue. It appears to be nearly always preceded by a precancerous condition known as monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, or MGUS. When scientists first discovered MGUS, it was aptly named because at the time the significance of finding elevated levels of abnormal antibodies in someone's body was unclear. Now we know it's a precursor to multiple myeloma, and about 3% of Caucasians over 50 have it, while the rate among African Americans may be double. Now, MGUS causes no symptoms. You won't even know you have it unless your doctor finds it incidentally during routine blood work. The chance of MGUS progressing into myeloma is about 1% per year, which means many MGUS-stricken people may die from other causes before they develop myeloma. However, since multiple myeloma is basically a death sentence, scientists have been desperate to find ways to stop MGUS in its tracks. Given the safety and efficacy of the turmeric spice component curcumin against other types of cancer cells, researchers from the University of Texas collected multiple myeloma cells and put them in a petri dish. Without any intervention, the cancer cells quadrupled within a few days. That's how fast cancer can grow. But when a little curcumin was added to the broth they were bathing in, the myeloma cells' growth was either stunted or stopped altogether. As we've discovered, stopping cancer in a laboratory is one thing. What about in people? In 2009, a pilot study found that half, 5 out of 10, of the subjects with MGUS who had particularly high abnormal antibody levels responded positively to curcumin supplements. None, 0 out of 9, of those given a placebo experienced a similar drop in antibody levels. Buoyed by this success, scientists conducted a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial and achieved similarly encouraging results in both patients with MGUS and with those with so-called smoldering multiple myeloma in early stage of the disease. This result suggests that a simple spice found in the grocery store might have the ability to slow and stop this horrific cancer in a certain percentage of patients, though we won't know until longer studies are performed to see if these hopeful changes in blood work biomarkers translate into changes in actual patient outcomes. In the meanwhile, it wouldn't hurt to spice up your diet. Are animal viruses involved in human blood cancers? The reason people eating plant-based diets appear to have much lower rates of blood cancers may be due to the foods they're choosing to eat and/or choosing to avoid. To tease out the role different animal products might play in the myriad blood cancers, we would need to conduct a very large study. Enter the aptly named EPIC study, the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition, which did just that. As you heard in Chapter 4, researchers recruited more than 400,000 men and women across 10 countries, followed them for about 9 years. If you recall, regular chicken consumption was associated with an increased risk for pancreatic cancer. Similar findings were found for blood cancers. Of all the animal products studied, including unusual categories such as offal or entrails and organs, poultry tended to be associated with the greatest increased risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, all grades of follicular lymphoma, and B-cell lymphoma, such as B-cell chronic lymphatic leukemia, including small lymphocytic leukemia and pro-lymphocytic lymphocytic leukemia. The EPIC study found that risk increased between 56% and 280% for every 50 grams of poultry consumed daily. For comparison, a cooked boneless chicken breast may weigh as much as 384 grams. Why is there so much lymphoma and leukemia risk associated with eating such relatively small amounts of poultry? The researchers suggested this result could be a fluke, or it could be due to the drugs, such as antibiotics that are often fed to chickens and turkeys to promote their growth, or it might be the dioxins found in some poultry meat, which have been linked to lymphoma. But dairy can also contain dioxins, and milk consumption was not linked to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The researchers surmised it may be the cancer-causing viruses in poultry, given that lower risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma has been associated with eating meat cooked well done instead of rare, thereby inactivating any viruses. This suggestion is consistent with the results of the NIH-AARP study, which found an association between eating just done chicken and one type of lymphoma and lower risk of another blood cancer tied to greater exposure to the cooked meat carcinogen MEIQX. How could less cancer be linked to more carcinogen exposure? Well, MEIQX is one of the heterocyclic amines created by cooking meat at high temperatures, such as baking, broiling, or frying. If, in the case of blood cancers, one causes a poultry virus, then the more meat is cooked, the more likely it is that the virus was destroyed. Cancer-causing poultry viruses, including the avian herpes virus that caused Marek's disease, several retroviruses like reticuloendotheliosis virus, the avian leukosis virus found in chickens, and the lymphoproliferative disease virus found in turkeys, may explain the higher rates of blood cancers among farmers, slaughterhouse workers, and butchers. Viruses can cause cancer by directly inserting a cancer-causing gene into a host's DNA. Animal viruses can infect people who prepare meat with unpleasant skin diseases, such as contagious pustular dermatitis. There's even a well-defined medical condition commonly known as butcher's warts that affects the hands of those who handle fresh meat, including poultry and fish. Even the wives of butchers appear to be at higher risk for cervical cancer, a cancer definitively associated with wart virus exposure. Workers in poultry slaughterhouses have been found to have higher rates of cancers of the mouth, nasal cavities, throat, esophagus, rectum, liver, and blood. On a public health level, the concern here is that the cancer-causing viruses present in poultry and poultry products may then be transmitted to those in the general population who handle or eat inadequately cooked chicken. These results were replicated recently in the largest such investigation to date, studying more than 20,000 workers in poultry slaughtering and processing plants. They confirmed the findings of three other studies done to date. Workers in these facilities do have increased risk of dying from certain cancers, including cancers of the blood. Researchers are finally starting to connect the dots. The high levels of antibodies to avian leukosis sarcoma viruses and reticuloendotheliosis viruses recently found in poultry workers provide evidence of human exposure to these cancer-causing poultry viruses. Even line workers who simply cut up the finished product and weren't ever exposed to live birds had elevated levels of antibodies in their blood. Beyond just occupational safety, the potential threat to the public, the researchers concluded, is not trivial. Elevated blood cancer rates can even be traced back to the farm. An analysis of more than 100,000 death certificates found that those who grew up on a farm raising animals appeared significantly more likely to develop a blood cancer later in life, whereas growing up on a farm growing only crops was not. Worst was growing up on a poultry farm, which was associated with nearly three times the odds of developing blood cancer. Exposure to cattle and pigs has also been associated with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. A 2003 study by University of California researchers revealed that nearly three-quarters of human subjects tested positive for exposure to bovine leukemia virus, likely through the consumption of meat and dairy products. Approximately 85% of U.S. dairy herds have tested positive for the virus, and 100% on industrial-scale operations. However, just because people are exposed to a virus that causes cancer in cows does not mean that humans themselves can become actively infected with it. In 2014, researchers supported in part by the U.S. Army Breast Cancer Research Program published a remarkable report in a journal of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They reported that the bovine leukemia virus DNA was found to be incorporated into normal and cancerous human breast tissue, effectively proving that people can also become infected with this cancer-causing animal virus. To date, however, the role poultry and other farm animal viruses play in the development of human cancers remains unknown. What about the feline leukemia virus? Thankfully, pet companionship is associated with lower rates of lymphoma, which is a personal relief, given how many animals I've shared my life with. And the longer people have had cats or dogs in their lives, the lower their risk. In one study, the lowest risk of lymphoma was found in people who have had pets for 20 years or longer. The researchers suspect the reason is connected to the fact that having pets may have beneficial effects on the immune system. A pair of Harvard studies suggested that diet soda consumption may increase the risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma, but this association was only seen among men and was not confirmed in two other large studies on aspartame-sweetened soda. Eliminating soda can't hurt, though, in addition to making the dietary changes I've already talked about. Plant-based diets are associated with nearly half the risk of blood cancers, a protection likely to derive both from the avoidance of foods tied to liquid tumors, such as poultry, as well as the additional consumption of fruits and vegetables. Greens may be particularly useful for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and turmeric for multiple myeloma. The role tumor-promoting farm animal viruses play in human cancers is not known, but this should be a research priority given the potential extent of public exposure.